You can't beat the sound of a contented cat. That's why veterinary surgeon and natural pet food pioneer John Burns developed Burns Pet Nutrition. Because he knows the positive impact a natural diet has on our beloved pets. And our premium cat food is designed to satisfy even the most finicky eaters. For natural, no nasty, wholesome recipes, choose Burns Pet Nutrition. Available from veterinary clinics and all good pet shops across Ireland.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Colonel Tim Collins has been in the news after branding the Alliance Party pro-nationalist. The UUP's North Down candidate also said people wouldn't vote for United Ireland if it meant losing disability living allowance.
Northern Ireland is not really, its voice isn't being heard in Westminster sufficiently to bring the benefits of the United Kingdom to the people of Northern Ireland. And for that reason, I decided it's something that I could do something about and I would do something about.
His party colleague Robin Swan has also made the headlines after saying he'll stand down as health minister once a general election is called.
You will be your party's Westminster candidate for South Antrim at the forthcoming general election. Will you remain as health minister right up to polling day?
No, Mark, my intention wouldn't be to stay right up to polling day because the party will kick in and there'll be other stages as well.
The Justice Minister Naomi Long still hasn't made up her mind whether she'll stand or not for her Alliance Party in East Belfast.
I've just taken up a role in the Department of Justice. I'm enthused about that and I want to be able to deliver in that role. And that's where my focus is right now. When the general election comes around, we will find the right candidate at the right time to ensure that we can put forward our best opportunity to retake that East Belfast seat.
And the Irish language has been making the headlines too, as bilingual signs continue to cause controversy in Belfast.
But are they traumatised? That's the question that I would have. I mean, what is the basis for suggesting that people are traumatised by seeing the Irish language on a street sign?
There's a lot to talk about, so let's get on with it. I'm joined by the Belfast Telegraph reporter Andrew Madden and political commentator based in Newry, Ursula Savage. So let's start off with Tim Collins, Colonel Tim Collins, very famous for the Iraq War and that speech, which actually wasn't recorded. Everybody thinks it was, but that's Kenneth Branagh.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. It wasn't recorded, actually, but there was a journalist on the scene that managed to capture most of it in very trusty shorthand, so we do have a record of it.
Andrea, I have to admit, you know, over the years, I've seen people parachuting themselves into politics. Yes. Sometimes journalists, and that's the most embarrassing version of events, and sometimes people from other walks of life. And we saw Tim Collins coming into politics. You know, you just know that no matter how it goes, he's not going to be conventional anyway.
No, not at all. I mean, he didn't have any really political background to speak of. You know, he didn't serve as a councillor like a lot of people do. But he would have been obviously familiar with the UUP leader, Doug Beattie, because they served in the same regiment. Doug Beattie would actually have been one of the soldiers that listened to that eve of battle speech prior to the invasion of Iraq. But no political background whatsoever, so it did come as somewhat of a surprise. I mean, he was kind of well known by people from Northern Ireland, given he was born and educated here, and because of his seniority within the army and that speech that we've mentioned. But he had no political background whatsoever. So when he was announced in January as a candidate for the upcoming general election, it was very much a surprise.
He did an interview at the weekend in the newsletter.
Yes. Well, now, apparently this was actually conducted about 2 months ago, but it was only just published there in the weekend newsletter. And let's just say it didn't go down well with many people. And I don't think it would have went down too well either with Doug Beattie.
Well, I think we can say it didn't go down too well with Doug Beattie. He has spoken about it.
Yes,
I think we can say that many people in the media, you know, we found it very strange. It certainly didn't go through the party press office, put it that way.
No, not at all. He was very kind of off the cuff and wasn't towing the party line.
But maybe, Ursula, maybe the public, we don't need processed. Maybe the public like this kind of straight talking, kind of shoot from the hip kind of politics. Might we be misinterpreting how Tim Collins's comments might go down in North Down?
It's probably still too early to tell how it'll be received on the ground, but I did think the tone of the interview, whatever else about the actual policy stances that he was that were coming across within it, the tone of the interview was quite disparaging, be that about, you know, the current MPs and or about the political system at the moment, saying that current MPs don't have any gravitas and saying that they're mostly worried about, he talked a lot about excrement and potholes. But what I thought when I saw that is he's basically saying that if he were elected, he wouldn't be interested in daily constituency politics, because like it or not, and yes, you know, there will be the time for like the lovely conversations and the constitutional questions, they're always going to be important. But he really was saying, you know, if I get in there, I'll have bigger fish to fry than whatever your worries are. So I don't think it will have gone down that well with people in the constituency.
Well, I don't know what the roads are like in North Down, but mm-hmm. I do know that...
Well, across Northern Ireland.
Across Northern Ireland, the potholes is the big issue at the moment.
It is indeed, yeah. And let's be honest, constituents care about those things, especially if they get caught in these potholes and damage their car or get injured.
And people are damaging the cars and people are bursting their tyres.
100%,
And money's been paid out in compensation.
Very much so.
And there is a big problem with the roads here. He lives in Canterbury. He's running in North Down. Is that something that you think voters will care about? Or is that just something where we throw at people? Do you think that's an issue, Ursula?
Well, in a way, you could say it just comes down to geography, where you happen to be living, because MPs do spend so much of their time over in London anyway. I think much more important than where he's physically based would be whether or not he can show that he understands the people in North Down, whether he can show that he understands the issues that matter to them. Very localised issues, very small issues maybe to somebody who's not familiar with the area. And I think what he showed whenever he made those comments about the potholes is that he's not maybe just in tune with what's going on. So that, I think, more than him not being based in the constituency, will be a red flag for people considering voting for him, because it'd be very hard to represent people if you don't know people, and you can't know people if you don't spend time with them. So it's not insurmountable and it's not impossible that somebody could live outside a constituency and do a good job of representing them, but I think he has a long way to go before he would be able to show them that maybe he's bridged that gap.
Parachuting in, it's not a new thing, especially in England. It's very normal that people find a seat, people find an association, people find somewhere.
Very much so, yeah, but it's not down the road, it's across the Irish Sea he's currently living. I mean, he has said, you know, if he wins the seat, he will buy a house in Lyle, but we'll have to see about that. And then it begs the question, I mean, what in the campaign trail, is he going to just fly over a couple of times a week and knock on a few doors and then fly back, or how's that going to work? It's kind of unclear at the minute.
He also made comments about the Alliance Party. Now, this is a widely repeated trope. Now, let's be honest, many in the nationalist community would regard the Alliance Party as being in favour of the status quo and therefore being effectively pro-union. And let's be honest, Alliance did start out as a pro-union party, specifically a pro-union party. There's a lot of mud being thrown at the Alliance Party, or obviously the sitting MP in North Down, Stephen Farry, but people are always going for this sort of, how is he a pro-nationalist?
Yeah, he said that the position of the Alliance Party is at least vaguely, if not broadly, pro-nationalist, and that people need to be aware of that, and wants to offer a modern progressive deal within the union. But Alliance's main selling point is that they're neither green or orange, and whenever the time comes, if it does come for a border poll, then they'll deal with that when that time comes. But the main selling point is that, as I say, they're neither orange nor green, so that's why they're seen as kind of the middle of the road voters, and it seems they're growing more and more attractive to many voters, as we've seen in election results in recent years.
Well, what Tim Collins said, he said the position of the Alliance Party is at least vaguely, if not broadly, pro-nationalist. He said people need to be aware of that. Mm-hmm. He said he wanted to offer a modern progressive deal within the union. Mm-hmm. Ursula, the Alliance Party have described that as inaccurate and indeed offensive. I found the offensive word a little strong.
Yeah.
What did you think?
There's a strong term to use, but perhaps it's offensive maybe how much he's maybe willfully misunderstanding the position that Alliance takes on these questions. Maybe that's what's more offensive than being called a nationalist. But I think again he's showing maybe a lack of understanding about the current situation in the North at the moment and how people currently vote. He didn't sound like somebody when he said that who wanted to stand in a constituency that has currently voted in an Alliance MP, when he was being so disparaging about them and acting nearly as if they'd been foolish voting in Stephen Farry, as if they'd been hoodwinked, as if the constituency themselves didn't know what they had been voting for whenever they selected Stephen Farry. And I think he just didn't seem to be kind of understanding the nuances of politics here to the point that you'd need to if you were planning to stand in an election. And again, I think it just goes back to that idea that he's going to have to spend a lot of time and effort showing that he does understand things, because, you know, for better or worse, there's a lot of political nuances to get your head around if you're trying to get involved in things here. And when you're over in England or coming parachuting in from anywhere else, it's going to be very, very difficult to do that unless you have your homework done and have it done well. And even the way that he phrased it, you know, that people would need to be aware of that, it came across a bit patronising, as if people didn't understand what they were doing. And I don't think voters would take too kindly to that either.
Well, Doug Beattie says he still has confidence in Tim Collins. And I mean, he has to. He's not going to change his mind now. He says everyone who gets into politics has to be nurtured in some shape or form. And that's what we were talking about. Yeah. Normally people come through the ranks, he said, like this.
Yeah, and he kind of blamed himself almost that he wasn't, like the party or Doug Beattie himself didn't brief Tim Collins well enough on the party's stances and policies and kind of what not to say and what to say.
I agree there that, you know, you need to be educated a bit more in the policies, or you can be brought up to date on like the party line on certain things. But I still think that when it comes back to the tone and the attitude that came across in the interview, it's very hard to nurture that through somebody and to kind of, you know, work that out in a way that can be done with just being referring to party policies or by explaining that. So I still think that even with Doug Beattie acknowledging maybe that the party didn't nurture him enough before he did that interview, I still think there's a way to go.
He gave that interview 2 months ago. It was wrong.
What difference does that make?
Here's the difference. Because 2 months now, we've had to work with Tim and rectify the mistakes that we've seen. Because everybody...
You mean change his worldview?
Because everybody who gets into politics needs to be nurtured in some shape or form. I'm sitting here as a leader of the Ulster Unionist Party. When I was a councillor, somebody had to nurture me to understand it. When I became an MLA, somebody had to nurture me to understand it. I was not the finished article when I went into politics. I had to learn. People have to learn. Tim has to learn as well.
Before we move on from Tim Collins, he has said, and there was a very lengthy and wide-ranging interview, he said that some people wouldn't vote for a United Ireland if it meant losing Disability Living Allowance. Now, we should point out that Disability Living Allowance was replaced by PIP, Personal Independence Payments, in 2013. But that brings together not only the issue of United Ireland, but the issue of people on benefits. Now, clearly, that's very popular at the moment. There isn't the same feeling around the welfare state as there once was. Mm-hmm. But again,
it was very disparaging. I mean, he seemed to be suggesting that people on disability benefits are somehow work shy. And he's got to remember, there's thousands and thousands of people in receipt of these benefits across Northern Ireland. And there'll be quite a few of them as well in North Ireland constituency, which will be his prospective voters. So I think it was a very misjudged thing to say.
Ursula, but many people will agree with that. Many, many people have been, or dissatisfied, I suppose, with the benefit system. Many people believe that they're paying taxes and that other people are living off their taxes. That's not rich people, that's working people, that's the self-employed people. So, you know, there could be, those remarks may be more popular than many of us may want to believe.
I thought that those remarks particularly were very, very unusual, and the idea that people wouldn't want to vote for United Ireland because they would have to get up early and go to work, I thought that was just such a bizarre way to frame an argument and such a strange argument to make in favour of the union. That's what I thought. I thought, if that's why you think that people in the North would want to stay in the union, is that really the strongest argument that you can make for it? Is that really kind of what you would want people to think about, like why they shouldn't make a constitutional change? It was a very strange argument, and again, very disparaging and very patronising to suggest that, you know, the only reason people would want to vote one way or another is because they're work shy and because they don't want to do anything. And it's kind of come back to that kind of, whether it's demonisation or belittling of people who make use of the benefit system. And we know how badly of the benefit system is at the moment and the problems that it's creating for people. But rather than recognising that and suggesting that something needs to be done in order to strengthen that and to support people, he's being disparaging about those people and quite insulting about those people and suggesting that, you know, that's the only that's the only priority that they would have in their lives, or the only way that they'll make opinions is because they wouldn't want to have to go out and work.
Well, I suppose it's up to the electorate of North Down ultimately to cast judgment on these things. We are talking about the various talking points raised in that interview. He also perhaps took a stronger stance on immigration than your typical UUP voter, and perhaps than your typical North Down voter, who are traditionally very liberal.
Very much so, yeah. Exactly what he said was that the greatest migration of people since the Second World War is happening now, and the faces of our whole societies are changing. And what we see in Germany, France, Italy and Great Britain, it will come to Northern Ireland. He claimed that the Republic of Ireland is completely overwhelmed by the mass tide of immigration, and we need to start addressing these problems because they are collective problems. Now, obviously, as you mentioned, that goes very strongly against the stance of his party, who are seen as more very liberal on this kind of issue, and voters in North Down.
Staying with the UUP, Robin Swan, who was a very popular with many people, health minister, many people said that he was very, very competent during COVID-19. Many people disagree with that, notably Van Morrison.
Yes.
But he is saying, and a lot of people are disappointed, that he will stand down as health minister once a general election is called. Now, everyone agrees that the health service in Northern Ireland has deep set problems, and it needs an awful hard work, and it needs an awful lot of leadership, and it needs an awful lot of reform. So a lot of people are a wee bit annoyed now. They're a wee bit thrown over that.
I mean, Mr. Swan himself told the BBC quite recently that Northern Ireland needs £1 billion in terms of health just to stand still. And just the way the party's played this seems quite strange, and possibly they could have done a lot better, because we already knew that Robin Swan was going to stand in the general election before he was made health minister, albeit by the space of a few days. So the questions were raised straight away. I mean, so what's going to happen then when the election comes up? Because the assembly was restored and the executive was restored in February. We're talking about having an election in October, November time. So that doesn't leave you a lot of time to get any, you know, work done in earnest in regards to reforming the health service and tackling things like waiting lists. And you have to remember as well, he said there recently in the interview at the weekend on Sunday Politics that he intends to stand down prior to, or when the election gets called. So that'll be some months before the actual election's held and for poll days.
And that is the reality that you have announced. You will be your party's Westminster candidate for South Antrim at the forthcoming general election. Will you remain as health minister right up to polling day?
No, Mark, my intention wouldn't be to stay right up to polling day, because the party will kick in and there'll be other stages as well. So that decision will be made long before the election day is called. It'll be something that'll be made by my party leader. But look...
So during the campaign, you don't see yourself being the health minister?
No, and I don't think it would be fair to do that.
So that'll cut his time down around the executive table even shorter. So it seems quite strange. So it looks like Mike Nesmith's going to be filling his boots as health minister in the meantime.
But Ursula, perhaps we're being very naive about this. We're talking about party politics. Robin Swan clearly has an ambition to get Westminster sitting, because he's moving in to South Antrim because it's a winnable seat.
It is indeed.
Paul Girvan has, he's sitting on a 2,600 majority.
Very much so.
That's doable.
It is doable, yeah. And as you say, Robin Swan's a popular guy. You know, he's well known for his time at the pandemic, so shrewd political move to have him run there. But, and I suppose it'll give him a bit more publicity being the health minister for the next few months anyway.
Naomi Long, who is widely expected to be the Alliance Party East Belfast MP candidate, she says that's not finalised. General terms, most political commentators would say she's every chance fighting the DUP in that constituency, but she's the Justice Minister. Now, perhaps the amount of work that the Justice Minister is facing, the job of work that they have to do is not the same as that before the Health Minister. But still, she could be in the same pickle.
She could be, and I would likely say that she's watching how the story unfolds very closely to see how the public react to the idea of somebody standing aside in order to run, or whether or not they're planning to run their department at the same time as being an election, and obviously they decided they're not going to do that in the UUP. I think in both situations, considering that the Westminster candidates were put into the executive at that stage, it reminds me of whenever people are asking for directions and you would say to them, well, it wouldn't start here. it's nearly unfortunate that all those decisions had to be made so quickly back to back, and they couldn't really see the big picture at any stage or have any certainty about what was happening before, for example, Robin Swan was selected as the Westminster candidate. If they had known that he would be an executive minister a short few weeks afterwards, perhaps something would have happened differently, one direction or another. Again, with Naomi, like you say, she has every chance running in the East Belfast constituency, but perhaps she will decide that she would rather stay in the portfolio that she has. When she was probably considering that up until February of this year, she was thinking, well, nothing's happened with the Assembly at the moment. It would make complete sense for her to want to move across to Westminster. That's completely turned on its head now. And she has a very big role. Also, she could be looking at the SDLP, who, not to take away from any of the MLAs that they have in the Assembly at the moment, have two of their best players in Westminster, who are somewhat sidelined at times because they're not in the Assembly and they're not in the official opposition. She may be looking at that and thinking, well, I'd rather be here where perhaps more of the action happens, and she wouldn't want to be flying over to London and contending with that. What would happen with the Assembly party in the Assembly if she wasn't there, and Sorka East was fighting for a seat as well? She wouldn't be there. Stephen Farrell would be hoping to retain his seat. You know, so she'd have all those kind of things to work out. Who would be leading the alliance within the Assembly if she were to go? And will that have an impact on whether or not she wants to put her name forward to stand for the election?
Andrew, you have followed for many years, to move on from Westminster politics, you have followed for many years the politics of Belfast City Council, which is obviously a very significant council here because of its budget, because of its size, and because Belfast is the main city here. There have been arguments over the Irish language, and mostly around Irish language bilingual street signs, for many years. Now, this continues because of an agreement to erect 301 bilingual street signs in West Belfast. This has sparked heated exchanges. I love the way we put that, heated exchanges. I'm just reading out what the headline writer has written. What is this about?
So essentially what happened was, last October, the council agreed for plans to erect en masse dual language street signs in English and Irish in West Belfast's Gaeltacht Quarter, an area where there's a lot of Irish speakers. So essentially what happened was, they set a threshold of 15% of residents in a single street. If they object, then the plans won't go ahead. But this only happened in one street after a consultation was carried out following October's decision. So what happened was, last Friday, a Belfast City Council committee was asked essentially to give the final green light for the erection of 301 bilingual street signs in the Gaeltacht Quarter. And this was kind of expected to a degree, to maybe cause a bit of a row, but to ultimately get the green light with not much fanfare. But one particular councillor kind of ruffled a few feathers, Ian McLaughlin of the DUP, when he said that there was a lot of people in his constituency, in his area, in his community where he grew up and serves, there's a lot of people whose single interaction with the Irish language is very poor. And it was usually when the murderer or terrorist that murdered their loved one used to scream and squeal the famous words, Chuggy Arla, when they left the scene of their horrendous crime. So this, he took issue for this reason, and some of the nationalist councillors on the committee thought this was just kind of an outrageous thing to say, and was quite
well. He went on to say, and I think he said, "I don't care if it upsets anyone or not. We have people today who are traumatized when you mention the words Irish language. So nothing that you propose eases the fears of those who do not want any interaction whatsoever with the Irish language." Now that is quite a fundamentalist stance. So there's no compromise there, but. Ursula, I know you have an involvement with the Irish language. I know you can speak Irish. I know you speak Irish. I suppose many unionists would listen to this and say, well, given the fact that, as Councillor McLaughlin says, well, and he says, we have people today, but some people are traumatised by the very mention of the Irish language, that they might say, therefore, are the street signs worth it if they're going to leave people traumatised?
But are they traumatised? That's the question that I would have. I mean, what is the basis for suggesting that people are traumatised by seeing the Irish language on a street sign? It's not borne out in any research that I'm aware of. I think Carl White, the SDLP councillor, he suggested that those comments that he made were beneath contempt. And I completely agree with that, because to try and link the Irish language back to something like that there again is completely detached from what is really happening within communities when you see how the Irish language is growing and flourishing. So for somebody to suggest such negative connotations without providing any evidence or research or anything, it really comes across as perhaps they're just trying to stoke tensions, trying to make waves. And I think it's really not borne out in anything that I have ever seen on the ground.
Ursula Savage, Andrew Madden, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of The Bell Tell was produced by Olivia Peden, the sound design by Rory Bowens. The clips you heard were from the BBC and RTE.
You can't beat the sound of a contented cat. That's why veterinary surgeon and natural pet food pioneer John Burns developed Burns Pet Nutrition. Because he knows the positive impact a natural diet has on our beloved pets. And our premium cat food is designed to satisfy even the most finicky eaters. For natural, no nasty, wholesome recipes, choose Burns Pet Nutrition. Available from veterinary clinics and all good pet shops across Ireland.